Kind of think I got two talks this morning, but we'll see how it goes. It'll be two short talks, don't worry, not two long ones. I was going to take a dip around on a couple of scriptures. So I want to start in John 9, verses 1 to 5. This is a passage where John recounts Jesus healing the man that was blind from birth. I just really want to read the preamble to it. I'm not going to do the miracle, but we know what happens. Jesus healed him. Spoiler alert. Okay, so John chapter 9, verse 1. As he went along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" "Neither this man nor his parents sinned," said Jesus, "but this happened so that the work of God might be displayed in his life. As long as it is day, we must do the work of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world." The disciple, I'll leave it there. He goes on, he makes mud, spits in the mud, rubs it in the guy's eyes, goes away, he gets healed. My praise to you. The disciples thinking, yeah, who sinned? Because the Jewish traditional thinking was, where there's suffering, there must be sin. And so this is very traditional thinking. Who sinned? They even believed in prenatal sin. And I think that if we suffer, I don't know if you're like me, but if I'm suffering, I start repenting of everything I've ever done again, and a few things I probably haven't done, but I'll just go through a list because I'm sure I'm deserving of the suffering. But it's that you can understand where that comes from. Or maybe it's just me, I don't know. And as Christians, when we suffer, we have Jesus with us in the midst of our suffering, and we should be able to suffer better than those who don't have Jesus. It should be more, there's a comfort available to us in the midst of our suffering that we don't always make available to ourselves because we're convinced of our unforgivable sinfulness. It's mad. Anyways, Jesus wanted to correct their thinking, and he said, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but this happened so that the work of God might be displayed in his life." So there was another purpose, there was a higher purpose, the glory of God. And it kind of reminds me of that passage in Joshua. You don't have to turn there, but when Joshua went into, they came to the promised land. He was on his way to do battle in Jericho, and as he was on the path, it's at the end of Joshua chapter 5, it says, "Now when Joshua was near Jericho, he looked up and saw a man standing in front of him with a drawn sword in his hand. Joshua went up to him and asked, 'Are you for us or for our enemies?' 'Neither,' he replied, 'but as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come.' Then Joshua fell face down to the ground in reverence and asked him, 'What message does my Lord have for his servant?' Commander of the Lord's army replied, 'Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy.' And Joshua did so." We were just singing about that earlier. The place where you're standing is holy ground. And, you know, Joshua is just about, literally just, you know, across the Jordan, about to do battle. And here's this heavenly being in his way with a drawn sword. And theologians will describe it as a theophany, a pre-incarnate image of Jesus, the commander of the host of heaven. Under the Lord's army. And so Joshua says, you for us or for our enemy. And we have a very binary way of looking at things. If we've got a problem, is God for me or against me on this one? Does God want me to do this or not? You know, does God want to grow this church or not? Does God want to heal so-and-so or not? And this response, neither, says that, yeah, Jesus is for the glory of God, and the glory of God alone. Although Joshua was doing what he was told to do, to go in and take the land, the mission wasn't about the people of Israel or about their enemies. It was about the glory of God. And so, this commander of the Lord's army told him what to do. That's marching around the city of Jericho and the walls fall, and that's been recounted for thousands of years since, because it was something that God had commanded, God had ordained. They took the battle according to the Lord's plans. And that's what people talk about. And so because God was glorified in that. I mean, in the Garden of Gethsemane, we won't turn to it, but in the Garden of Gethsemane, when Peter attacked the high priest's servant with a sword, and Jesus kind of stopped him and said, do you not think that I could call 12 legions of angels to come and fight for me? So Peter had, this was wrong. Well, Peter thought was wrong, so he attacked it with a sword. But it was God's plan. It was always God's plan to send his son to die for us. So what are we facing? And what are we praying? How are we praying? And how are we thinking? Sometimes the thing in front of us, the concern that we have, the thing that we are praying about, the thing that we're worried about, is the be-all and end-all. This needs to be fixed. I can remember when, and I'll never forget, when Helen was carrying our second lad, James. She had all kinds of problems. And we told twice that she had lost him. And twice the doctors were wrong. He was still there, hanging around. He came early, but for months, Helen was bedridden for 5.5 months. James came about 2 months early, so nearly the whole pregnancy, Helen was in bed. And we just didn't know. We just didn't know. And, obviously I was praying that it'd be all right, that James would come out okay. And all I got was, when I was seeking the Lord, all I got was, trust me. And I hated that. I hated that more than anything else. But that's all God wanted me to do, was to trust him. Trust him. What I wanted him to say was, it'll be all right. Don't worry, it'll be all right. He said, trust me. I hated that. In the midst of that, I hated it. But God was faithful, and James came out, and he's bulletproof. And he was never ill. And he should be, being a prem baby, but he's bulletproof, always has been. Sorry, I digress. God had other plans through that. I don't know what they were, I wouldn't like to presume upon them, but it was more than just fixing James, fixing Helen. Now, James's birth was nothing short of a miracle. I might as well tell you, because when Helen was in labor, she went into labor far too early, and that was when they said, well, if he does survive, he's got less than 5% chance of surviving, if he does survive, he'll be a vegetable. And they went out of the theatre and just left Helen and I in the theatre for a while, so just laid hands on her and prayed that the contractions would stop, and they did. As we prayed, we saw this contraction monitor just flatline. Fetal heart monitor was still going fine, but the contractions just stopped when we prayed. And so he hung around for another 5 or 6 weeks until it was just about safe for him to come out. It was a miracle, and we still talk of that. And he just turned 30 this week. It's amazing. And being a paramedic, even time to time, goes back to that. pram baby unit. So where he popped out in Pembrey. Yeah, that's sweet. I love that. Enough about me and my family. Let's go back to Jesus. In this passage I read from John 9, he says, as long as it is day, we must do the work of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Theologians and commentaries go to great length about what Jesus meant by night. What was night? Was that his impending death? Was that disbelief? Was it the right? Was it all sorts of things? And rather than focusing on, actually, as long as it's day, we must do his work. And I want to focus on that. While it is day, we must do his work. And it's a very present command. It's now. Because night is coming. I can remember dear Peter Hindley, when he was with us, telling me how he missed doing all the ministry stuff, all the preaching that he used to do. He really missed all of that. At the end of our lives, we won't be able to do the stuff that we can do today. As we get older, we become less capable, less able, less fit. And so this command, this encouragement from Jesus, as long as it is day, we must do the work of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. I like to imagine when he's telling this story that it's at the end of the day and the light is fading and night is coming. And I think Jesus uses a lot of imagery to kind of reinforce that message. And throughout John's gospel, John picks up on this theme of night and day, light and darkness. And I just want to encourage us that this is a now command. It's for now. Let's do the work of the kingdom now. Do it now. Don't look for God to do a new thing. I think that just puts off what is we are obligated to do as disciples, to do the work of Jesus. We know the kingdom stuff. We know the basic stuff. You know, look after the poor, feed the poor. Love one another, forgive one another, heal the sick, raise the dead, preach good news. Earn the right to preach good news. It's a now command. Do it now while Jesus is with us. Now we know that when we worship him, we just feel the presence of God in this place. He's in this place and he still is in this place. John uses this imagery in several places in his gospel. There's a bit I quite like in chapter 12, verse 35 and 36. Jesus told them, "You're going to have the light just a little while longer. Walk while you have the light before darkness overtakes you. The man who walks in the dark does not know where he is going. Put your trust in the light while you have it, so that you may become sons of light." When he had finished speaking, Jesus left and hid himself from them. But before I go on, I just want to pick up that very last bit. When he had finished speaking, Jesus left and hid himself from them. Have you ever heard a sermon on that? Ever? Jesus hid himself from them. We love all the sermons about seek, knock, and you will find, all that sort of stuff. Jesus hid himself. Love that. He did that. Love that he did that. It was to prove a point. It was to underline this thing. Because you know that party finished when he left. You know, when Jesus is in the room, when there are crowds around Jesus, there's stuff going on. You know, he's teaching them stuff they would never have heard before. He spoke with authority, healed the sick, raised the dead. All of this was going on. And you know the crowds came to him because of that. There was a party going on. When he hid himself from them, you know, there's that really awkward moment. Where is he going? Where is Jesus? Where is Jesus? There are lots of people here looking. Should we sing a hymn? Yes, a hymn. Let's pray. Let's just pray. He might come back. If we just get down and pray, he might come back. He hid himself to underline this thing. Do the work while I'm with you. While I'm here with you, I am the light of the world. He is the light of the world. He is the light in this present darkness. Don't let him hide himself to prove a point. There's too much that goes on in this world that's not of him. Would you trust in the light while you have it, so that you may become sons of light? And it seems like an almost inevitability about it. Walk while you have the light. It's like a present reality now. Do it now before darkness overtakes you. It seems an inevitability about this. Gain ground before that happens. There's a... living in the country, I suppose, we are quite used to dark. We don't have street lights where we live. We're used to living in the dark, but... We went to, a few years back, we were in Israel, we went to the Israeli Holocaust Museum, that memorial, not museum, Holocaust Memorial, Yad Vashem. And it's a profoundly moving experience. There's a children's memorial there. And it's you go down this slope and it's kind of underground, it's hollowed out of rock, and as you go down, you come out of this midday sunshine, when we were there, it was a midday sunshine, brilliant Middle East sunshine. And you come underground and you come into this, you go into this memorial, which is underground, and you go into utter darkness. I mean, it's black darkness. You cannot see your hand in front of your face. It's black. And it's so disorientating. It's so confounding and confusing. You don't know where you are. You're groping around for anything. And there is a handrail to the side where you shuffle along just hanging onto this handrail. And it was designed deliberately to create this disorientation, this feeling of being lost and confused and disorientated. And it was designed deliberately like that to bring this feeling that those who suffered at the hands of the Nazis in the concentration camps would have felt this bewildering disorientation and confusion and not knowing what's going on. And then when you come around the corner, you come into this place where there are like five little flames in a column, little vertical flames. And the whole place is mirrored in there, and these five flames are reflected into millions and millions and millions of flames that go out. It's almost like infinitely into space. It's a tragically beautiful memorial. I just want to say that they read the names of every child that they have, their age and where they came from. And there's some soft music playing, and they just read these names of these children that lost. And apparently it takes 3 months to get through the list of names. And it's on a loop, a 3-month loop, sorry, it's just an aside. But the enemy, the powers of darkness, like the Nazis did so effectively, seek to confuse, confound, disorientate, deceive, and lie. The enemy will whisper lies to you, to me. They will seek to deceive, to disorientate, so you start going in the wrong direction rather than the right direction. The enemy uses darkness very effectively to confound and confuse us. Jesus brings light into our confusion. Anything that's brought out into the light, brought out into before Jesus can be cleared up. It's the stuff that goes on in the dark that the enemy loves. He loves to do his work in the dark. This is why Jesus said, walk while you have the light before darkness overtakes you. The man who walks in darkness does not know where he's going. Put your trust in the light while you have it, so that you may become sons of light. We are children of light, and this world needs to see that light that we have. So don't keep it under a bushel, don't keep it hidden. Just know that God's with you. If you, wherever you are this week, whoever you are with, whoever you see. I mean, Simon was sharing stuff this morning that he was doing at the workplace. I love to hear that. Love to hear of people encountering Jesus when they least expect it. And I think God would have us do more. Do more. Just trust Him to use you. Know that you're a child of light. Know that you have His authority to bring light into darkness. There's a Wimber had, there was a chap called John Wimber who started the Vineyard Movement, if you've never heard of him. He had some one-liners, and I love his one-liners. And one of them was, believe your beliefs, doubt your doubts. Believe your beliefs, doubt your doubts. You are believers. You are believers. You're not feelers, you're believers. Believe your beliefs, doubt your doubts. Believe what you believe, doubt what you doubt. Don't let the enemy sow doubts. Don't believe those doubts. Don't believe the deception. Don't believe the lies. Believe what you believe. That Christ is King. You have his authorized you, he's chosen you, he's anointed you. As a disciple, he's saying, get out there, win the lost, preach the good news, heal the sick, raise the dead, give to the poor. Love your neighbor. Love God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. Do the kingdom stuff now. Don't wait. Don't wait. If you dare wait for God to do a new thing. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. He's doing now. He wants you to do. It's the same commission. Just do it. Let's do it. I've run out of words. Let's pray and ask God to come and let's do some kingdom stuff between us. Jesus, thank you, Lord, thank you. Thank you that you're so desperate for us to know this. Lord, that you are so keen that we know this, that you are the light, and that we can trust you, and that you want us to do your work while we still have light, before darkness overtakes us. So Lord, I ask that you would use us. Even now, Lord, that you would come and have your way with each of us. Lord, I know that it's always and only for your glory. We would seek to save the lost, not because we want to make their lives better, but because you deserve that. You deserve the reward of your suffering. Change our minds, Lord. Change our mindset. Change the way we think. Always seek your heart and your mind and look for your ways and your will. All that we do. Minister, would you minister to us? Yourself from us. You would come, bring light into this place.